This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is part of our episode, Preservation. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Natural history collections serve as a time capsule of sorts, preserving life on Earth. And these collections, birds, bones, stones, whatever it is, they always carry the fingerprints of those who collected the specimens. Their passion, interest, and hard work become part of what's stored in flashy display cases or dusty drawers. So when a collection's future is threatened, it gets personal. Irina Zhorov reports.
In 1962, Neil Douglas accepted a position in the brand new biology department of what is now the University of Louisiana, Monroe. The school asked him to start a biology course. Sure, he said. Then he realized, because the department was new, there was nothing to work with.
So I began collecting, frantically, all the fishes and frogs and toads and snakes and lizards and mammals that I could get hold of.
He arrived on campus in a U-Haul full of preserved animals. As he settled into his position, the collection effort focused on fish and turned more systematic.
I had an army of students that pursued their interest and my interest in far as collection of fishes, and we would take collecting trips.
Some spots they visited annually.
So we had a tremendous record of what transpired as far as changes since we went the same place year after year after year for 23 straight years.
ULM is kind of a small school, but its fish collection grew to be one of the most scientifically important in the region. Scientists have described 29 new species of fish from this collection and have used it to evaluate changes in the environment. The collection has spent the past 5 years cramped into an old locker room by the football stadium. It hasn't had a paid curator in years. But then, ULM received some money to renovate the athletic facilities. And in early 2017, the university decided to get rid of the fish. Actually, it decided to get rid of two collections, the fish and the school's massive herbarium, its plant collection. Neil is now 86, and this is his life's work.
Of course, at my age, I reflect back a lot about what was and why not now, and so forth. And competition and making money are foremost in administration of universities' minds. It's got to be.
I called ULM to talk about their decision and got no response. But here's some context. ULM is a public school in a state that has repeatedly gouged higher ed funding. Research is not a funding priority on campus. Instead, the school trains its students for well-paying jobs in the region.
And the buzz occupations, medical, computers, and so forth.
For better or worse, taxonomists are in less demand than nurses. Thomas Sasek is a biologist at the university and volunteers as a curator for the collections. He shows me around the locker room and the collection's last days there. The herbarium is housed in 336 metal cabinets snaking through the low room.
It's just kind of a labyrinth.
We walk towards a cabinet marked M, and Thomas takes out some folders full of dried magnolia blooms mounted on paper.
This is a favorite one that a lot of people like. It's this grandiflora. It has really big leaves and beautiful flowers.
Magnolia is the state flower, a striking white bloom with thick petals and a yellow center.
This is from our local parish. So this says backyard of 205 Filial Avenue. I think that's Dr. Thomas's house.
We had just passed a portrait of Dr. Dale Thomas, who collected much of the herbarium. His picture was unceremoniously tucked behind some boxes.
There's a lot of stuff from his house.
So this is just a whole cabinet of magnolias.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Because the collections are so particular to Louisiana and the Southeast, Thomas wanted them to stay close, so local students and researchers could easily use them. He arranged for the fish to go to Tulane University in New Orleans and the herbarium to go to Texas. Both are about 5 hours away. At least, Thomas concedes, they'll be well cared for and available to scientists. Still, he's really struggling with it.
It's just sad to see it go.
They're your experiences captured by plants on paper.
That's Barbara Tears, director of the herbarium at the New York Botanical Garden.
You know, we all look at our specimens. We remember who we were with, what we were doing, what we found that day, how it made us feel. The specimens we generate are a public record for everyone to use, but they're very personal to us. And to see that go away would be extremely hard.
Barbara maintains a list of herbaria around the world. She gets a call whenever one is eliminated. She says there's a common narrative to these closings.
Generally, when a key player, a scientist who was really interested in the herbarium and devoted his career to building it, when that person leaves, sometimes they're not replaced with someone with similar research interests, and the herbarium is sent somewhere else.
The fate of a collection often depends on just one key person. But it's also something else, real estate.
It's always a function of the space that the collection occupies.
Hank Bard is the curator of the fish collection at Tulane University, where much of ULM's fish collection will end up. If Tulane's own fish were somewhere on campus, where space is tight, there wouldn't be much the school could do to help ULM. But the fish are stored in a bunker at a former U.S. Navy facility a half hour from campus. There's plenty of space there. It's kind of like the vast metaphorical Tulane basement.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it is kind of a wow thing.
Fish in jars occupy rows and rows of tall metal shelving. These glass jars full of fish strike me as retro. Like, somehow we've moved beyond this in science, and there isn't really a need to preserve these almost Victorian artifacts. And Hank says that's sort of true.
One of the big things that's jeopardizing retaining collection curators, particularly in university campuses, is the change in biological research.
Biology is becoming more and more molecular, looking at the cells rather than the whole organism. But Hank says it's a false separation. You still need the full animal, even when studying cells. You need it for DNA. You need it to identify species. You need it to understand what you're looking at. Hank says new hires are often molecular biologists who may not agree with him.
A person using molecular techniques has a different kind of laboratory needs, different startup needs, a lot more expensive startup costs, you know, for that researcher. And the interest in the collection just really plummets at that point because they've just a whole shift, you know, a change in focus.
Are you concerned when you retire that that might happen?
Yeah, I am. I'm concerned about that. I am.
He's looking ahead and taking steps to make sure the collection is preserved once he's gone, and keeping his fingers crossed that it works.
That was Irina Zhurov reporting.